My guest at this time is Garry Kasparov. For 20 years, he was the best chess player in the world. But for the past quarter century, he has also been an outspoken voice for freedom. He retired from chess a decade ago to focus his time and energy on the Russian democracy movement and to warn the world about the true character and ambitions of Russian President Vladimir Putin. Garry's unvarnished assessment of Putin's grip on power and the dangers it presents to all of us is the focus of his new book, Winter is Coming: Why Vladimir Putin and the Enemies of the Free World Must Be Stopped. And Garry, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thanks for inviting me.
You write in your book that there are two biggest problems here. First of all, the swiftness with which Russia abandoned its pursuit of a free society, and then the lack of resistance that Putin has encountered from the United States and other nations in his thirst for power. Let's start with the latter point. Why have the United States and other democratic nations, do you think, been so reluctant to challenge Putin and choose to engage with him rather than push back against what he's doing?
In my book, I describe the period of the last 25 years. I believe that many mistakes were made in the 90s after the collapse of the Soviet Union and the end of the Cold War. You know, everybody was in a cheerful mood, and nobody wanted to think about the future and the right strategy for the future. And that's why in building relations with new Russia, the United States, and the Western Europe, they made several mistakes, assuming that the transition of Russia from communism to democracy would be almost automatic. And several key moments, like in 1995, when Clinton and Yeltsin first time discussed Iranian nuclear program, the West could put more pressure on Russia, actually, to cut these dangerous projects at the very beginning. And later on, you know, George W. Bush, you know, looking for an alliance with Russia after 9/11, just to have a supply alliance to Afghanistan. And then, of course, Barack Obama, who decided that he could deal with Putin's shadow, Putin's puppet, Dmitry Medvedev, who was technically the president of Russia for 4 years, and offered the policy of reset after a Russian invasion of the tiny Republic of Georgia. I think it was some kind of, you know, form of intellectual self-deception, because nobody wanted to acknowledge that Putin's Russia was a problem and would be even a bigger problem, because recognizing Putin as a problem would require some kind of action. And we could see that this administration and many European governments, they hope that this problem will be dealt with future governments.
Garry, you mentioned what happened in Georgia in the summer of 2008. More recently, we've obviously seen the annexing of Crimea, the Russian actions in the Ukraine, a very significant Russian collaboration with the Iranians and their nuclear program, and now even Russian forces involved in propping up the Assad regime. What is Putin's global strategy?
Putin's strategy, if you may call it strategy, in fact, is a tactics of survival, because he must stay in power in Russia, and to stay in Kremlin, he has to come up with a good rationale for Russian public. Economy is in terrible shape, and nobody expects it to get better, especially with oil prices at a range of 50, and unlikely to rise dramatically in the nearest future. And, of course, that's one of Putin's goals, to create a mess, a chaos and wars in the Middle East in expectations that that could affect oil prices the way he wants it. But Putin, when he ran out of enemies in Russia, as every dictator, he has been looking for enemies elsewhere. And his image as the strong leader who could defy the United States, who could send Russian troops abroad, who can annex territories of the neighboring countries, this is what he sells to Russian public. Russia today, from the eyes of Putin's propaganda machine that has been working 24/7, and it's really poisonous and brainwashing, it represents our country as a fortress of good surrounded by evil, and Putin is the only savior who could protect Mother Russia against global conspiracy.
You talk in the book about how he was worried about the impression that people might get if he tried to violate the Constitution and run for another term last decade. Do you believe he has any sort of reservations about that anymore? As long as he's in power, will he have any intention of even having elections?
Oh, the elections in Russia is nothing else but a charade, and Putin controls it from, you know, from A to Z. And 8 years ago, yes, he was... I wouldn't say shy, but he was not as bold as now. Also, let's remember that after invading Republic of Georgia in 2008, he was not ready to annex these territories of South Ossetia and Abkhazia as he did with Crimea 6 years later. And that's what's happened with all dictators in the past. They have been growing in their strength and arrogance while seeing that there was no adequate response from the free world.
You also write in the book that while a lot of people think that Putin's grand plan is to reconstitute the Soviet Union, and maybe in some ways territorially that could be true, but the mentality of him and his cronies in Moscow is very different. You write that they're not content to just take away people's rights and have a Dhaka on the Black Sea. They want to live the high life, get super rich, and enjoy themselves all over the world. How is that perhaps an even greater threat than what we faced with the Soviet Union?
It's a greater threat because, unlike Soviet Union, we're dealing with the full-blown one-man dictatorship, and it's much less predictable. Soviet Union was a threat, existential threat, but there was a Politburo, there was a Central Committee of the Communist Party, and there was a system that tried to protect itself. Here is we're dealing with a situation where any threat to a dictator could be dealt by the whole power of the Russian state. Putin and his inner circle, his few cronies, recognize that they've burned all the bridges. And that's why, you know, the man who is in power in Russia and in control of the second largest nuclear arsenal in the world, I mean, he could be really unpredictable and much more dangerous because he doesn't have the same... limitations as the Soviet leaders, because Soviet Union had to respect certain international treaties, and there were some kind of agreements that we knew could put an end to Soviet expansion. With Putin, you know, he demonstrated it's nothing works. If he thinks that it helps him to stay in power for another year, I mean, he would do absolutely anything. And his brazen actions in Syria, and just the latest report that Russian bombs killed 45 people at the Syrian market, these actions demonstrated that Putin would not be stopped by any agreement, any treaty, any negotiation that has been concluded before.
You write in your book, Gary, that to your great frustration, that many American officials, once they leave office, write about how they were frustrated by Putin. They didn't trust him. They didn't think he was a good guy. But ultimately, they worked with him because they thought that was really the only option they had. And you say they never end up pushing back. What advice do you have for American leaders? What's the right way? What do they need to understand about Putin? And what's the right way to use leverage against him that he will appreciate?
I don't think Putin will appreciate, you know, any actions against him, but we should not think about Putin right now, but about people surrounding him. Yes, Putin himself and probably a few of his henchmen around him, they've burned all the bridges, and they can expect nothing from the future if they are kicked out from power. But there are still many, many more who are not happy to see a potential, you know, backlash of having an open confrontation with the United States, with the free world, and those who believe that the millions and billions that they've made are being in power could be productively used, even if they are out of Russia, out of power, living comfortably in the free world. We have to convince these people, the Russian elite and Russian middle class, especially those in Moscow, that Putin's regime is a dead end, and American administration, even without European allies, has powerful mechanisms of sending this message across. It's some people say that if it's not negotiation, if it's not diplomacy, no concessions, the war is the only alternative. But, you know, before we look at the boots on the ground as a last resort, there are so many economic and especially financial options to bring Russian economy to the ground and to destroy the foundation of Putin's power in Russia.
You've mentioned in the book that energy could be used as a very effective tool. Explain how and whether you think the United States or any other Western power, the European Union, for example, has the temerity to use it.
Putin needs high oil prices because Russian budget depends on oil and gas. Those are sort of the main items of Russian income. And oil at 50 doesn't offer Putin any comfort. So that's why he's desperately trying to create cows, international cows, especially in the Middle East, to push these prices up. Now, bringing these prices down which is what maybe not be possible, but more important, creating alternative sources of oil and gas supply, which can be done by America and Europe, will hurt Putin badly. Europeans, you know, for years, they pretended that there are no alternative to Russian gas supply, and only now they have been looking, and by the way, quite successfully, for new sources of supply.
Couple minutes left in our conversation with Garry Kasparov, and a couple of questions in that time. Sir, you write in your book not very favorably about either President Bush, President Clinton, or President Obama. Let's specifically talk about Obama for a moment. You mentioned he came into office with the reset button, which you point out in the book was actually misspelled and means something completely different in Russian. And then, of course, we see the interaction with Russia when it comes to the Iranian nuclear deal and now in Syria. What's your specific response to how Obama has responded to Putin?
Obama's response to Putin, if you may call it a response, was very weak. And I think it destroyed the reputation of U.S. presidency globally. And it will take a considerable amount of time for a new president to restore this credibility. Because if you don't have credibility and nobody takes your word seriously, and who will after Obama's infamous red line in Syria 2 years ago, then the force remains your only argument. And, you know, I would remind people that Ronald Reagan, who was called by many a warmonger, used less force than four presidents following him.
It might be impossible to say, but given your insights, what do you think Obama and Dmitry Medvedev were talking about a few years ago when that open mic caught Obama saying he would have more flexibility?
I believe that Obama, I mean, recognizing that Medvedev was simply a messenger, basically told him that he would be happy just to find common ground with Putin and just to continue this reset policy even with Putin, basically ignoring all the problems that have been created during the 4 years of this failed policy.
Many people who have criticized Vladimir Putin in the past have mysteriously turned up dead. Do you worry about that?
Yes, I do. That's why I live in New York, not in Moscow. Also recognizing that even if you are outside of Russia, I mean, nobody guarantees your safety. But I believe I have no choice. It's like a moral imperative, especially after my close friend and colleague, great opposition leader Boris Nemtsov, was gunned down in front of Kremlin on February 27 this year.
Finally, what do you see as the hope for Russian democracy returning? How will it happen?
I don't expect that the fall of Putin's regime will lead to democracy. Putin has steadily destroyed all democratic institutions, and you don't have democratic components to rebuild democratic institutions instantly. Most likely, it will be a chaos. But one thing I know from history books, and this is the message for all leaders, current and future, in America and Europe, is that even if price of bringing down Putin today looks high, tomorrow the price will be higher, and the day after tomorrow could be unbearable. So that's why sooner we can bring Putin down, sooner we can start rebuilding Russia, better the chance that Russia will join the family of civilized nations and will start playing a positive role, not a destructive one.
I cannot recommend this book more strongly. Winter is Coming is a fabulous chronicle of how Vladimir Putin has assembled his power and the danger he poses to not only his own country, the region, but the entire world. Gary, thank you very much for your time today. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Gary Kasparov, for 20 years, the best chess player in the world for the past quarter century, an outspoken voice for freedom. He is the author of Winter is Coming, Why Vladimir Putin and the Enemies of the Free World Must Be Stopped. I'm Greg Corumbus, reporting for Radio America.